Welcome to the Voice Tech Podcast. Join me, Carl Robinson, in conversation with the world's leading voice technology experts. Discover the latest products, tools, and techniques, and learn to build the voice apps of the future.
The voice assistants everybody's talking about, the Google Homes, the Alexas. This is not a specific area of interest for us, but we are more looking at all kinds of products that use voice to enhance the user experience.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Voice Tech Podcast. My name's Carl Robinson and the topic today is investing in voice. Today's episode, recorded on April the 23rd, 2020, contains my conversation with Yannick Oswald, investor at Mangrove Capital Partners. Mangrove Capital is a venture capital firm focusing on early stage companies, many of those prior to product launch. They've had a number of very successful seed investments, billion-dollar companies such as Skype, Wix, and many more. The best news is that they are very bullish on voice technology. So in this episode, Yannick first of all explains why he's so excited about voice technology and the movements he's seen in the space. We do cover the coronavirus crisis, how this has affected funding, consumer behavior, and all the new opportunities that Yannick sees created by this unusual situation. Then we discuss why voice will become much bigger than just today's voice platforms, and how truly proactive, sociable voice assistants are not as far away as some people may think. Then the conversation moves on to content, podcasting in particular. Yannick tells us about his latest voice tech investment in Sybil, and much, much more. It was a great conversation. Yannick, a really savvy investor, he's a visionary, and we had a very informative, entertaining conversation that I'm excited to bring to you today. The Score Publishing team are busy preparing to host the fantastic Digital Book World 2020. It's a three-day event that gathers together the wide world of publishing, from trade to independent, educational to corporate, as well as all the tech companies, of course, including plenty of voice tech. So it's all taking place between Monday, September the 14th and Wednesday, September the 16th, 2020. It's happening in Nashville, Tennessee, on the beautiful campus of Vanderbilt University. Tickets include all the sessions, the workshops, keynotes, and admission to the DBW Awards, as well as two passes to DBW Global, which is a worldwide online event. So grab a ticket now at voicetechpodcast.com/digitalbookworld. And to get 30% off the standard ticket price, just enter the code VoiceTechCarl at checkout. Just a quick reminder that full episodes of the Voice Tech Podcast are now only available for a limited time after release. You can get all the full episodes at voicetechpodcast.com/pro. As a Voice Tech Pro, you get your own premium RSS feed from Patreon, which gives you access to the entire back catalogue of episodes, early access to all the new episodes, as well as exclusive interviews and bonus questions, no ads, and higher quality sound. Plus, you'll be helping to ensure that I can keep producing more episodes like this one. So if that sounds good to you, head over to voicetechpodcast.com/pro and sign up today. I'm counting on your support. I'm on the line with Yannick Oswald, an investor at Mangrove Capital Partners, calling in from Luxembourg. Mangrove Capital Partners is a venture capital firm helping innovative entrepreneurs start and grow global disruptive tech companies. They chase transformational ideas around the world. Their sweet spot is early stage, and they regularly partner with entrepreneurs prior to product launch. So it's very interesting from our point of view. They've done many seed investments, including many billion-dollar companies like Skype, probably heard of them, Wix, WalkMe, and many more. They have a focus on Europe and Israel, which is another interesting point. Yannick's invested all over Europe, Paris to Barcelona, London, etc. And Mangrove are paying especially close attention to voice technology. So very glad to have you on the line. Yannick, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Carl. Glad to be here.
Yeah, it's wonderful to have you on. Haven't had a chance to really talk about voice startup funding before, so this is going to be a new one for me. I know you've got a very interesting take on it as well. One of the ambassadors for the voice first movement in the funding world. Maybe you could kick us off by just telling us a little bit more about Mangrove. I gave the intro there, but tell us what kind of things do you get involved in? What are the clients and the deals you'd be doing recently? We'll go from there.
Yeah, so we are a pan-European early stage venture firm. I think how we're a little bit special is that we have always 200 million funds, but we have a very concentrated portfolio. So we do only around 30 investments, meaning 6 to 7 investments per person. And we always take the lead, meaning we get in very early and we are an active cheerleader, if you want, so of entrepreneurs. And we have, on the other hand, also a very broad geographical view. So we're going there where the good opportunities are.
Nice.
In terms of investment checks, I think, you know, $500,000 up to $5 million.
So this is seed funding. I know there's a stage called pre-seed as well. Do you do both of those? You say early stage. Maybe you could clarify the difference between those and where you guys lie on that.
Yeah, we don't really care so much about that at the moment being put on the rounds. But, you know, I'd say we do 30% pre-launch, 30% seed, meaning there's a product out there. People are using it. Mm. We don't care so much about revenues at that point in time. And then we do 30%, a bit more, the early A stage.
Okay.
Meaning the company has revenues and they are at the stage where, you know, you ship money into acceleration.
Yeah, right. Excellent. And what part of your portfolio is comprised by voice technology companies in particular? Do you guys focus exclusively on that, or is that a new interest for you?
So it's a relatively new interest. I think we actively started looking at the space a year and a half ago. And since then, we've done one investment in the space, a company called Cibel in Paris. Essentially a company that wants to reinvent entertainment by giving people access to high-end audio entertainment.
Brilliant. Well, we can dig into that a little bit in a second. What, in general, what's the feeling in the investor community? Are you guys one of the earliest, do you think? Are you really leading the charge on this, or are there other firms that are now dipping their toe in the water and showing an interest in voice?
So in the US, there are a bunch of venture firms looking at the space. In Europe, I'd say there are, if you look at all the investments that have been done, there are probably 3 to 4 venture firms that are looking at the space. But we are definitely, I'd say, we're the first one getting excited about it.
Okay, very nice. Are there any particular characteristics that you look for then in voice tech companies? Because there's obviously a wide range of different types of products that are being launched. People are trying different things. I've noticed some patterns just from interviewing people on the podcast. So I'm sure you've noticed some trends as well as the types of companies or the type of use cases that voice is being applied to that tend to do better from a attraction point of view or from a valuation point of view. What are the typical kind of use cases or the areas, potentially industries, that are most interesting to you right now?
Yeah, so I think before we dive deep into that, it's important how, you know, to understand how we look at the space. So initially, why we got interested in it is because we saw consumer apps using voice technology and, you know, for data input. So a very simple use case, but engagement and conversion metrics were extremely good. And so this told me, well, users out there, they actually, you know, they're ready to use this new interface and they're actually enjoying it. And they, you know, communicate, engage with the products more than if they have to use their keyboard to put in data. So that was the initial starting point where, you know, we realized this is real, right? Voice. From there, what we are looking at, we have the platforms and we have the voice interface at large. The platforms, you know, the voice assistants everybody's talking about, the Google Homes, the Alexas, this is not a specific area of interest for us. But we are more looking at all kinds of products that use voice to enhance the user experience.
Indeed.
And essentially, our big vision is that, you know, at the end of the day, 80% of the interactions we have with software can be done by voice, and we don't need a keyboard to do that.
It's a vision we share here, absolutely. The keyboard, it feels so antiquated, the fact that it's lasted so long, crying out for a new alternative and one that's a little bit more human as well. Okay, so have you noticed any trends, any particular types of companies that stand out, and maybe some of the early successes? I was going to say, as an example on my side, one that I've probably mentioned before, that I've noticed that there are companies that are training these NLU models on very specific domains, like maybe it's police audio or an e-commerce catalog, that tend to do very well because that's where the machine learning tends to produce high accuracy results, and therefore the product works well and it serves the use case. It's very domain specific, whereas companies that are trying to create an all singing, all dancing, do anything chatbot tend to fail. What about on your side? What are the things that stood out for you as success factors?
So the success story, I don't think we have seen success stories yet because we're so early in the journey of this technology. But where we've seen companies that are, you know, growing and using the technology successfully is in the B2B space. And obviously for very domain-specific interactions, You can think of manual labor, you can't use your hands. You can think of HQ trivia when you're driving. You can think of when you're cooking, when you order stuff, you order on a recurring basis. So these are very, on the one hand, it's an extension, you know, in the B2B space of the software that that people have been using on the ground. On the other hand, it's still very niche. So I haven't seen yet, and I'm talking to many founders in the space, technology that, for example, revolutionizes e-commerce at a broader scale, just because it's very difficult in terms of discovery to figure it out. And I think the key reason for it is the following. You know, what we believe is that, you know, we will have voice-first products out there. So, you know, you interact with a voice assistant or for some stuff still with your screen. But the key, the starting point will be voice interaction. Yeah. And so right now what's happening is, you know, in all the consumer products, there's a people, they have a mobile app and they say, well, I build a voice feature, they often call it, on top of it. But it's just basically you need to think through the entire user experience, and that just takes time.
Yeah.
However, what I'm seeing right now, and I think it's an extremely exciting period that we're going through with the lockdown currently.
Of course.
Because essentially, you know, people are realizing that the social products that they have been using so far are not really social products, but they are more media products. You know, it's a kind of media, megaphones that people can use to
Just their broadcast brand. their opinions. Yeah, thinking of Facebook feed, Twitter, all this kind of stuff.
Exactly, to broadcast their brand. But on the other hand, you know, people are realizing, well, I need tech to actually create social experiences, social interactions that really matter, because that's the core of human beings. And so I think we're going through a period where products will be created that can drive the next decade. And voice essentially has the opportunity now to become that interface that is the closest interface to real life. And I think it's a very exciting period for voice, and we'll talk about a couple of examples later on.
Yeah, for sure. On the social side then, you said that some of these things that are missing. We're doing a lot of Zoom calls at the moment with the whole corona lockdown. And you mentioned before the call that spontaneity is a big thing that's missing from that. Can you maybe expand on that a little bit and how voice can help with that?
Yeah. So essentially with every interface, it takes time for the interface to be adopted. Voice is such a big big behavioral change that it takes time a little bit more than, you know, we saw previously for the desktops to the mobiles. And so that's number one. So how we have been thinking around it, you know, essentially what mobile gave you was a GPS, and it gave you like a computer in your pocket. Mm-hmm. And it gave you an amazing camera. What does voice give you? And I think voice does exactly the opposite. It takes a camera away from you. That's great. So you don't have to play, you know, your brand role, your media role that you are playing on other social networks or on Zoom. Mm-hmm. And number two, it allows you to connect with people in a very spontaneous way. So I think what voice gives you, but it's not yet, like in 10 years probably, is the social aspect where you can talk proactively with a voice assistant or voice technology at large. But right now, I think what it gives you is spontaneity. And it's received with the apps Discord, the other Clubhouse, all these apps where basically people join channels or groups and they just talk. They don't have to fake their presence, their physical presence, and portray an image. They can just be themselves. And I think it's like a pre-step to the social aspect of voice technology.
That's a really interesting point. Yeah, I love that. Yeah, getting away from this fake facade that's put up, like Instagram generation, et cetera, and actually reestablishing the connection between real people. Another point that you made before was about shared experiences as well. It does bring people together in different groups, and voice is inherently a communal activity. You know, when you speak out loud, other people can hear you, whereas heads down into your mobile phone, scrolling through your Facebook feed is inherently private. And in fact, it's kind of social faux pas to even look over someone's shoulder to see what they're doing. So I do like that aspect, both the spontaneity side of it and the community side of it. So I mean, in terms of the case studies then that you've worked with, let's put some a face on some of these innovations then. Is it Cybel or Cybel that you mentioned before? Cybel, based in Paris, glad to say.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that, because you've just led the seed round, was it August last year, I see? And you mentioned it's a platform for high-end audio content. So what was it that first attracted you to them, and what do they do? Could you give us the pitch for that?
So essentially, when Cybel, what they do is they reinvent audio entertainment. They actually create it. So that's number one. Number two is, why did we select this as our first investment in the space? Well, it's relatively simple. It's when you look at, we basically looked at the voice world and said, what could be the first innovations that we'd see? And so we said the first layer would probably, we are convinced it would be entertainment. Mm. And this is very much linked with the social experience that we can create around that. Just get off the screen. When I'm spending time with my family now in the lockdown, I just can't live all the time at the screen. So how can we create an experience that actually you can, in a group, enjoy? You can enjoy in different environments that you can do with just always looking at that screen. And when you test the product, and that's actually my first experience I had with it, I listened to an amazing documentary they had on the platform, and I essentially had the same experience than when I was watching a movie on a screen. I had the same feelings, the same experience. So, and that's when I realized, actually, you can create content that gives you the same level of experience than a movie. So that's number one. And number two, and then number three, there were a lot of podcasts out there and talk shows. And we said, that's great. But it's a very niche format, right? Mm-hmm. It's for well-educated, well-off people that have time to think and discuss specific topics. In certain cases, or other niche groups that are excited about a specific topic, but it is not a mass market product, if you want so. And so we said, here you really need to have deep content experience. And we met this team in Paris, and the team they sold a bunch of companies from influencer network, TV production companies. So they knew the content space in and out. So how can we create high-end content at scale for multiple audiences? And so that's why we backed that team pre-launch. And essentially what we're seeing now is probably interesting, because before the lockdown, you know, people were listening to the content on average an hour a day. It's an amazing result already. And it's often in the evening or late at night. But what we're seeing now is the lockdown. It's actually the usage curve is streamlined across the entire day. So we see very different behaviors coming up. And this is interesting. When you think about it, it takes 21 days to create an habit. So this is an amazing opportunity for voice-first products to catch their users and let them live the new experience they provide. Because within 21 days, you can get them engaged with products and create long-term users. And first of all, your ambassadors for the future.
Very interesting. Yeah, this is it's true. There's always a silver lining. Corona is the cloud that's hanging over all of us at the moment. But that communal listening experience and the opportunity to take advantage of these new habits is one that everyone should definitely pay attention to. This episode is brought to you by Manning Publishing, an independent publisher of a huge range of software development books. At Manning.com, you'll find books on all the technologies you need to learn in order to create world-class voice applications. All the books are available at Manning.com. And right now, Voice Tech Podcast listeners get a massive 40% off all the books with the promo code PodVoiceTech19. So go check it out at Manning.com. Tell us a little bit more about Cybel then. Look, from the high quality audio experience, you said it brings that, you know, community or that high quality experience. How does it work in practice? Like, and does it use the interactive voice technology, or is it something else? Is there some other element to it that's unique?
So interactive voice then we are not using yet. We're working on it. So we're working closely, by the way, with the Alexa team. But I think how does it essentially work is you listen to stuff and you have to imagine, just download the app, try it. Mm-hmm. You have the same experience in watching an amazing movie. And you have a catalog that goes from documentaries to children's stories to science fiction. And it works very much at the same. The key here is that we can provide you with content at scale. So we spot trends, we know what's in now, we find the content all over Europe and the US, mm-hmm. we translate it for you. And that's essentially it. And it doesn't stop there. If you think a little bit further, we have education content on it, works extremely well. We have some influencers on it, but basically there it's more talk format, but they, you know, it's JSON product to more, let's say, high-end content. Mm-hmm, and so it's basically it gives you, essentially you want to listen to audio content, you go to their platform and you know you get the best of the best. And we see very famous, I can't disclose it yet, but some of the most famous production houses out there that everybody knows that now are reaching out and they use content with the team.
Very interesting. I mean, it sounds like there's a real focus on quality. Do you think quality is the thing that listeners demand the most? How do you balance that with variety and what's the word, like novelty? I mean, it's a constant challenge for content-based apps to deliver that a never-ending stream of high-quality material. Really got to focus on high quality there. So it must be quite difficult to maintain a, you know, a high volume of output. Where's the trade-off there? Like, do you believe that it's okay to have less high-quality content? Is that what listeners are really asking for in the audio domain?
My answer is yes, but let's just define the term quality. Quality is it's production quality, yes, but it's also quality in terms of content. So what is the content that you are looking for and that is aligned with, you know, your expectations? How long should it be? 10 minutes? 15 minutes? 8 minutes? Number one, that's one aspect of quality. And then number two is obviously the bigger is the production aspect. But there's a lot of good content out there. There's a lot, but you need to, there's a certain expertise in it to find the content, to know the production houses, to know the best producers, to build a relationship with these guys. And that you don't build it overnight. And it's basically, I mean, the best example is Netflix, Casa de Papel. I mean, it's a Spanish production. Well, now I think it's in the US, but it's a worldwide blockbuster. But you know, this content was out there already. So that's what I said when we're working with production houses now from the US, from the UK, who reach out. You know, essentially, what you have out there right now is in terms of audio content, aggregators, many podcast aggregators just take content out there, aggregate it, add some exclusive content on top of it, and you can choose. Well, I mean, I can also find that stuff on the App Store if I want to.
Yeah.
And many of the long tail producers, this is their business and they have their own community and audience and they want to go through another platform.
Interesting. Fantastic. I wanted to ask a bit about the funding side of things then. When you were looking into their business, what were the factors that were most interesting to you from a voice company, an audio company? Are you looking at current traction? Were you looking at the growth potential? How did you evaluate their business? What were the things that stood out to you?
Yeah, so essentially, I think Cibel is a pre-launch company. So that was very much driven by our thesis, by having looked at the players out there. And we found in that team the qualities that we were looking for and the same we were aligned with our vision. So that's number one. I think at the seed stage, it's very much when you have a product out there, you need to show that people are using it and they're engaging with the product. That's, I think, the key criteria. And then number three, when you go post-seed, so early age, well, there you need to obviously show some revenues and some traction, basically that you're building a real business. Still very early, but at least, you know, the sign should be there that if you put money behind the business, that it's a very good probability that you can grow it.
That you're going to get it back, yeah. There's certain benchmarks maybe and certain guidelines as to the size of the market that a startup needs to tackle in order to be able to get VC funding at all. I've heard figures of $1 billion market. I've heard figures of $10 billion market. You know, you need to look for a $10 billion market opportunity so that you can grow $1 billion company, a company worth $1 billion in order to be able to like convince VCs to invest. Do you agree with those kind of guidelines? Does that still apply in the voice domain? Because those are really high numbers for some people, you know, and they think, wow, I'm never going to be able to get funding if they're only interested in $10 billion companies. What would be your advice there? And do you have any kind of guidelines or figures in mind?
So I think, you know, putting a number on the market size is always difficult. And it's most VCs shouldn't do that. But actually, essentially, the question that the VCs are asking themselves is, if this thing works, how big could it potentially be?
Right.
I have no clue if audio entertainment is going to be a $1 trillion industry, a $50 billion industry, or a $2 billion industry. What I know right now is there are not many good players in there. I believe, and that's, you know, my conviction, that voice first, or in this case, audio first, will become more important. And so basically, what I know right now is that the space is at least, you know, 500 million. A company, if you build a good asset in that space. But my belief is that this will grow much bigger in the next years. So my answer to that, you know, to the founders out there is that when you pitch a VC, it depends on their fund size. But if someone has a 100 million euro dollar fund, well, they want to return ideally 400, 500 million. So if a VC has a 20 or 15, 10% stake in one or two companies, well, you just can do the math for the size that they're looking for.
That's interesting, because that's a, what, 4x increase. But I've been led to believe they're always looking for at least 10x. So all of these kind of guidelines, they're kind of fluid, right? There's no hard and fast rules.
No. So basically, that's on the fund level. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of risk, and there are a bunch of companies who have don't work out. Some have good companies, they have good exits, but massive returners for VCs.
Mm.
And you have, obviously, you know, the massive outliers that everybody's talking about. But these are obviously, these are the needles in the haystack that,
well, that's
that
it.
We are looking for.
I understand that most VCs make most of their money off a very few number of deals, like just those outliers that really just go through the roof, and everyone's looking for that. But with voice, like we said, or like you said, that we've yet to find the killer app. So, well, how do you balance that as a VC? How do you assess a market which hasn't had any kind of breakout successes yet? Is there a methodology to it? Is it based a lot around experience and gut feeling? I don't know how you go about entering a space like that and making informed decisions on investment.
So basically, I think it's all about conviction, and it's obviously also about experience. Mm-hmm. So you have categories where it's more obvious things will work, but when it's more obvious, in the likelihood that these companies become massive outliers, is a little bit lower. I think Airbnb is a great example. Skype is a great example. I think nobody wanted to touch that company, right? Because why? I have a phone, right? Why should I use the internet?
Yeah.
Call it to you. What are you talking about? But so what we are looking for essentially, and it's a little bit more nuanced, but if I tell the entrepreneurs one thing out there, you know, tell me that you are solving a massive problem that has, and that your product has a material impact on people's lives. If you tell me I can do free calls, I think there are many people out there who would like that product. If you tell me that I can entertain you wherever you are in a better, a more social way than ever before, I think, well, that's pretty sexy, right?
Right.
Obviously, we need to prove it. We need to work on it. So that's number one. And then according to the stage, you know, essentially every business, the dynamics or the foundation of business is always very similar. You have marketplaces, you have consumer products, you have enterprise products, you have SaaS products. Obviously, we have seen, we see 2,500 companies a year, and we know, so we're also looking at numbers according to the stage. But still, we are very much a conviction-driven investor, and so far it worked out well.
Yeah, it seems to be. Question on that is that, how do you develop your convictions then? Obviously, meeting 2,500 startups a year obviously gives you a lot of data to play with straight away, but are there other like sources of information that you come to rely on? Do you read market reports, or is it a lot of talking to people? Where does the highest quality information tend to come from?
Yeah, number one, we're obviously working a lot with entrepreneurs, so we see a lot, you know, what's moving products and businesses. So that's number one. Number two, we obviously, I mean, it's one of the advantages of being more international. So we spend a lot of time in the US. Now, some of my colleagues, a lot of time in Asia lately. We are all over Europe. So we see the trends very much in early stage happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think thirdly, it's also we have a deep network, meaning we're talking to people, what gets people excited, etc. But the challenge is obviously you need to get in before.
Yeah.
So when I started talking about voice, people said, what are you talking about? What do you do? I mean, I don't need voice. I have a mobile. This obviously tells you, well, this is a good thing. you know? Because VCs, at the end of the day, they don't know shit. They just want to find an idea of a great entrepreneur, and then they follow him and they try to help him. But it's, as an early stage investor, when you get in so early as us, it's like you really need to think in terms of product. Why would that improve the user experience and have a material impact on people's lives? Another company we backed is a company 3 years ago. It's called Tay Health in the US, which basically is a medical diagnostics app. So we said, you know, GPs, I mean, that profession didn't really change in 300 years, and probably 95% of what they're doing could be replaced by tech. But if you told that someone 3 years ago, they said, you're fucking insane. But I mean, what are you talking about? You know?
Yeah.
I become a doctor. I said, you probably shouldn't become a doctor, right? Because your job will be replaced. But now, you know, you go to the US, everybody's using the app. People are like, I need to access a doctor. How can I do that? And so basically, it's just having a conviction around the space. So beyond being, we're a generalist firm, number one, we have a couple of areas that get us especially excited. And so voice, healthcare are some of these areas.
Excellent. Well, what would your advice be to people out there building products right now? They're thinking about getting investment, or they're hoping their product is big enough to get investment. Is there any particular strategy that you would expect them to follow, or you'd advise them to follow? I'm thinking about perhaps they should look for accelerators, incubators, that kind of a thing. Or is there certain areas that they should be working on? Obviously, the product is key. It's what you said, look for a big idea and build something that actually helps. But is there, are there certain like do's and don'ts or places that they can go in order to sort of maximize their chances of success?
I think it's like with building every business, right? You need to go out and you need to start doing it, number one. And I think in terms of steps, what you need to have is, depending on the business you're launching, you'd like to have some capital. So make sure you find the best partners out there to give you that capital. And surround yourself by great investors and by great people from the ecosystem. And just make sure that you don't lose time by going to conferences, accelerators. So there's a lot of noise in this industry. At the end of the day, you know, it's just you need to build a business, and all the rest doesn't matter. And so my building a business is hard, and it has always been hard and will always be hard. And so honestly, just surround you with the best people you can find. I built my career like that. I know many of our entrepreneurs who did it. People are very receptive. If you have a good idea, you need to try a couple of times, but that's part of the game. So this might be very high level, but if you think about it, if you have 3, 4, 5 good people around you, that's already a big thing. And just find the best people out there in your ecosystem.
Yeah, I hear that hackathons are a great place to meet technical co-founders. You get involved in the tech, you can meet people who are actually interested in building stuff as opposed to just talking around the problem and coming up with a lot of hot air. I know there are increasing number of accelerators, and there's the Alexa Fund, of course, you know, so you've got the big platform sponsoring these events now. So I think there's more and more opportunities to meet people, like-minded people, to build these businesses around voice. Are those useful to you in any way on the investment side? Do you tend to go to these events, these demo days, and check out what people have built?
No. So yes, the people at the Alexa Fund, they're great friends of mine, and they do a tremendous job in developing the ecosystem. In general, depends on the investors. We are the type of investors, we don't spend too much time at events. We spend time with entrepreneurs.
Okay.
Just because you can lose a lot of time there. And at the end of the day, you know, we spend time where we can add value and develop good relationships. And so it's, I try to spend as much time with my or directly with entrepreneurs that reach out to me. And it's very simple. I mean, you know, go on my blog, yannickoswald.com, and you submit a form. And I can tell you, you know, like any other investor, I suffer from FOMO. And if there's an interest for in that I'm interested about your product, I'll get back to you.
And right.
So,
yeah, I was going to say that is yannickoswald.com, right? And there's also mangrove.vc. Is that
exactly
mangrove.vc or yannickoswald.com? Is it as simple as that? Is it reaching out to investors? You just have to send an email, get some FaceTime, or at least get a chance to.
That's one way to do it. If you can find a way to get a direct introduction, that's obviously better.
Yeah.
Conversion is just higher. But again, you know, Europe is extremely fragmented. And it's the ecosystem relatively small. It's relatively easy if you have a compelling pitch, a compelling story, to get in touch with the relevant people.
What is the most compelling way to approach an investor? Like, what would you prefer? A video, a demo, just a quick email? Like, if your time is scarce and you've got a lot of people contacting you, what do you prefer to receive in terms of a pitch?
A good story. Depends on your stage. But if you're at an early stage, only thing you have is your story. That's essentially the only thing. It's you have to use that story to get investors. You have to use that story to get employees. You have to use that story to get customers. So it needs to be extremely crisp, and it's extremely difficult to craft that story.
As I understand it, there's obviously there's the product, market, founder fit. That's what we usually talk about, that triangle. When you're talking about story, you're talking about the story of why the founder has chosen to do this business and also why they're the best person to do the business, I assume.
Yes, exactly. It's essentially, I'll give you an example of Cbit. These guys have been in the game for a while. And even though they didn't have any tech experience, they knew the content world in and out. And so that's why I backed these guys. But introduction came through an angel investor friend in Paris. But they aren't 300, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that's number one. But they had a very, the story was very much aligned with our thesis on the space. So I think essentially it's a lot of A/B testing, but with everything, like with everything in life. So it's like, you know, finding the right investor is like finding a long-term partner on a journey that will, you know, make you work 24/7.
You just have to get out there and do it and pay attention to the feedback that's coming back and adapt.
Yeah.
The VoiceTech podcast is now on Medium. Each week, our Medium publication brings you a hand-picked selection of the best voice technology articles written by our guest authors. You can read about a wide variety of topics related to voice technology, including design, development, machine learning, ethics, opinion, and more. To receive all the content for free, just go to voicetechpodcast.com/medium and follow the publication. Let's talk a little bit about podcasting, because that's something I'm interested in. Obviously, we were talking about Sybil and the high quality audio. Not to say podcasting is not high quality, it can be extremely high quality. Yeah. I've been doing a lot of research recently into the space. There's such a huge range of content delivered via podcasts. I mean, you've got the really expensively produced branded podcasts put out by these big brands that cost like six figures to produce. You've got the anchor publications where just, with a mobile phone, just like sharing their thoughts with the world. But there's a real boom in podcasting. We see different forms happening now. We see flash briefings going on, shortcasting. We see narrative style, interview style, lots of different content formats and forms coming out. What are your thoughts around podcasting? It's seen as a boom on the consumer side, but do you see a real investment potential there?
Yeah. So I would just, before we dive into podcasting specifically, we need to define what it is. I'd say if we take a step back, we have audio content. And audio content has been around for 10 years. Audio books, I mean, very popular, it's okay-ish content. Somebody reads text for you. Number two, you had podcasts, the classic podcasts, meaning talk shows like the two of us are doing right now. Yes. And we've seen adoption. I mean, we all see the numbers. I think it's like 50% adoption now in the US. I don't know the exact KPI behind it. And it's growing faster and faster, especially since the last 3 years, I think.
Yes.
So how I look at it is the market is now mature, meaning finally people actually at a larger scale are ready to engage with audio content. So what will happen now is essentially what we've seen with any other medium, meaning you have talk shows, you have flash briefings, you have news, often flash briefings around news. I love that, you know. You will have still have audiobooks, and you will have all the other formats that you've seen on a screen will happen on audio. Just that it will be linked very much with a social experience, with new platforms such as the Alexa and Google Home devices, and perhaps one day the Siri OS, we'll see. This is basically how I look at it. Why I think that just, again, I get back to, I think also podcasts will now experience a boom or some types of audio content during this time is the social aspect to it. And this social experience should bring the content format to the next level. Versus now, it has been used during situations where we couldn't use a screen, you know. When we do stuff, we cook, we were driving, often when we were commuting, etc.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, because there's the social, when you were talking about that, I was thinking that the social side of people in the room conversing with one device. So there's an interaction between maybe two users of a single voice-enabled device. Or conversely, there's the social interaction that happens remotely via a device, you know, so you were describing Clubhouse before and kind of Zoom meetings or whatever. And then there's the whole aspect of the machine getting involved. There's the interactive nature of these voice interfaces. So you can have a response via the machine. And it introduces this whole new dynamic that we're just right on the cusp of.
Yeah, I think so. That's exactly it. So the first layer for me was audio entertainment. The second layer would be social experiences. And there will be a mix between audio entertainment. Mm. And then the third layer, I think we're not on the cusp yet. We'll see. I think it will happen sooner in many aspects. That's when you basically, the systems become practical. But then the opportunities are endless.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It really is a time of change, because one of the things that keeps popping up and I keep mentioning again and again is that kind of fusion of what is an ad and what is content. Because we're seeing interactive ads come out. And when an ad becomes interactive, it becomes more of a content experience. And so you have to ask yourself, well, what's the ad? What's the content? Am I enjoying this? If I'm enjoying it, is it really an ad at all? And I think the same is going to happen by interacting with these platforms. They're going to transition from very utilitarian, transactional, I'm asking for a certain thing, to the actual experience being part of the enjoyment. And I think, like you say, as they become more proactive, more responsive, more personalized, et cetera, et cetera.
I think audio ads is a topic I've been looking at a lot lately.
Have you?
It's an extremely interesting topic. And I think it might happen relatively quickly, but I don't know yet. And it's basically because it's dependent on two things. It's on one hand, obviously, the adoption of audio content. But on the other hand, it's also the adoption of devices that can digest interactive engagement. Mm. And so I've been talking with tons of radio stations who said, we're now playing around with it and conversion is amazing, right? We can make more revenues and our customers who run the ads can make more revenues. I think it will be contextually, it will be extremely interesting. If you can access users at the point in time where they are willing to interact with an ad and go one step further, it becomes extremely powerful. But they are many elements that need to come together to make it happen.
Yeah. Well, I think we're just seeing a general trend in that people are less willing to put up with ads, just a straightforward ad. It's in your face, it's in your feed or whatever. It's becoming more and more annoying, because the more time we spend on these platforms, the more we see them. I think people are becoming less tolerant for them, right? Which is why a lot of the branded content, inbound marketing, content marketing is on the up. People want to be given value by these brands, and they will repay those brands in turn with their patronage, for want of a better word. That is a general trend, that businesses are going to be creating more and more valuable content. Then we have to sort of start thinking about what that content is going to look like, whether it's going to be interactive, whether it's going to be social, and how that content is actually going to be created within the organization. And that's something I've been thinking about recently, is that especially with audio content, it's quite difficult to produce. You know, there's quite a lot of work that goes into producing audio, because you've got to think about it beforehand, you've got to plan it, then you've got to have all the equipment to set it all up and make sure that it sounds okay. It doesn't have to sound super high quality like Sybil, but, you know, there's more involved than writing a blog post.
I think that's it's a very important element. Initially, you know, when people started talking about voice platforms, not even the interface, more the platform said, see the next Wix. You know, for voice.
Yeah.
All right, basically, people said the same. We'll see the next weeks for mobile. But essentially, no, this won't happen, because it's just really, really hard to create audio content. Mm. And obviously, website at the time was also 30,000, right? If you want to pay, it's the same you're paying for a high-end title, audio title. So you say, well, there's a similarity, but it's actually, I think it's different in the sense that even if you get all the tools, you know, like Anchor gives you, to create good audio content is extremely different. It's much more difficult. What you are doing is so much more difficult than writing a blog. I'm sure you agree. And so I think that's extremely important. And that's key. I think that's also why there is an opportunity to build a platform that actually creates that type of content.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, I'm really obviously focused on content creation here. I try to industrialize and delegate as much of the kind of nuts and bolts. I used to do everything myself. I did everything end to end, the social media sharing. Now I've got some help. thanks to my sponsors. I want to say thanks to everyone who does contribute to this show, because you really actually do take a lot of work on my off my plate and allow me to focus on the interviews and interview people like Yannick. But it's not the case for everyone. And I think the vast majority of podcasters don't earn enough revenue from their audio in order to be able to get people to do that stuff. So they spend a super large amount of time just actually producing it. And I think that's a big turnoff for businesses. So we want more businesses to be producing audio content, to really embrace voice first and through the content marketing effort. I think more tools are definitely needed. So that's something I'm going to be keeping my eyes open for. Hopefully someone comes up with something soon. Maybe it'll be me. Maybe it'll be one of your portfolio companies. We'll see. All right. We're getting to the end of our time together. Let me ask you, what is on the horizon for Mangrove Partners? What are you going to be focusing your energies on over the next 6 months or so?
I think next 6 months we'll focus on making our companies take advantage of the town opportunity. We'll spend a lot of time with our portfolio companies. I think the overall theme right now is, even though we look at new opportunities, we actually just closed one investment, everything is in slow motion. And that's basically, you know, if you can't meet people, it's a very personal job. It just takes longer. You know, it takes one more call with one other person. So I think on the investment side, we'll continue just slower, like every other investor. Hence, we spend more time with our portfolio companies. There's just a lot of uncertainty in the world right now. So we have to make sure that our entrepreneurs navigate this period well, and actually also take advantage of the opportunities. As we said before, companies like Sybil, basically it's like 3x across the board, whatever metrics you look at.
Wow, fantastic. Well, I'm definitely going to give that a go because that sounds amazing. Where can people find out more about you online? I know we mentioned the URLs before, but maybe give it one more time and some of the social links as well if you've got.
Yeah, so please visit my blog. It's yannickoswald.com, and you can follow me on Twitter. You can follow me on LinkedIn. Yeah, would be great. And feel free to reach out if you're working on a great business.
Yes, I'm sure people will. Fantastic. It's been really interesting.
I suffer from FOMO, so I will look at it.
Yeah, you're doing Yannick a favor. Yeah, don't be shy. Good stuff. Yannick, thanks for coming on the show. Take care.
Thank you.
That's all for today. Very much hope you enjoyed listening. As always, you can find all the show notes with links to the resources mentioned in this episode at voicetechpodcast.com. If you enjoyed this episode, there's many ways to support me and the show. You can tell one friend or colleague about this episode. You can always leave a quick review on iTunes at voicetechpodcast.com/iTunes. Or you can write for the blog at voicetechpodcast.com/publish. Finally, you can become a sponsor at voicetechpodcast.com/donate. And know that your contribution really does make the show possible. I'll be back soon with another episode. But until then, I've been your host, Carl Robinson. Thank you for listening to the Voice Tech Podcast.